Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Hello again. Well, Israeli airstrikes on Gaza have continued overnight with at least 38 people killed since dawn. Aid that arrived 3 days ago is finally being distributed, but after an 80-day blockade, the scale of need is still vast, with hospitals at breaking point and fears that much of the civilian population is starving. Well, for the latest on this, let's hear from UNICEF spokesperson James Elder. James, good morning.
Colm, hi there. Good morning.
Israeli military airstrikes continuing in Gaza today. What can you tell us about the impact of those?
Horrendous. I mean, it's the first time, Colm, since I've been going to and fro from Gaza and keeping in touch with Gazans every single day, that the level of despondency, despair, it just bleeds through every single phone call. Yeah, it's almost a massacre every day. If we're looking at the 7-8 weeks since the ceasefire was broken, we're very close to 1,000 children now, 1,000 girls and boys having been killed since that date, to add to the whatever 15,000, 16,000. So it's horrendous. And as we know, a population on the brink of famine, some aid starting to flow, but right now it feels more tokenistic than meaningful. So, you know, everyone there waking up to yet another horrible day, if they woke up at all, Colm.
90 trucks entered Gaza about 3 days ago. Do we know where they went to, where they are now, and whether there's any luck with them being distributed?
Yeah, it's a great question. So from my side, from UNICEF, talking to colleagues on the ground today who literally spent 33 hours in those trucks, sleeping in those trucks, trying to get them across the border, those UNICEF trucks with the most critical nutritional supplies, a fraction of what we need, but the most critical nutritional supplies, we've got those now. So now we can start unloading them. Now we can start doing what we do, which is direct delivery to people in need. But it's not nearly enough. It should never have been allowed to get this bad, of course. So it's been a very difficult and dangerous first 48 hours after an 11-week blockade. But this is the beginnings of some aid. But I just think it's so important that we give a sense of just how little it is right now. We can't be drawn into optics. This has to be meaningful. It's great that there's international pressure, Colm, that finally, international law is respected and aid starts to flow. But we've got to keep looking at just how much people need. During the ceasefire, when we started to turn malnutrition around, it was 500 trucks a day and every single day. So when we're now talking in the dozens, it's not nearly enough.
All right. Your humanitarian colleagues in Médecins Sans Frontières have described the amount that's getting in as a ridiculously inadequate amount of aid. But what are the dilemmas for humanitarian organisations as to how this is spread out, whether to concentrate on one area and deliver there first? I mean, the moral dilemmas that are at play there. Can you give us an insight maybe into how that's planned?
Yeah, it's a very good point. Look, it's planned based on where we're allowed to go. So, you know, even getting aid in, the reason this has taken so long, despite that there is food to feed a million people for 4 months on the other side of the border, is because, you know, it is determined by the Israeli officials where we are allowed to go, and that's around distribution as well. So we have to get clearance to go down any road. If we don't get military clearance for that, often you'll sit at what's called a holding point. And if it's not deconflicted, if it's not cleared, then there is a risk that, you know, colleagues will be killed. And already, you know, this has killed more United Nations colleagues than any time since World War II. So in some ways, it's morally reprehensible, and it's horrendous for colleagues knowing the level of need, north, south, east and west. But we know where that need is, and humanitarian aid goes to the people, but we are restricted in that. We're restricted by, as you say, the amount of aid, Colm, we've got, but we're also restricted because, you know, right now, if we deem that the worst nutritional status for children, the most life-threatening, which it is in the north, but we're not allowed to access the north. So in some ways, the decision is taken out of our hands.
As I understand it, under Part 4 of the Geneva Convention, Article 55, it's the job of the Israeli authorities, the job of the occupying power, to get this aid to the people who need it, even if they have to supply that aid themselves. Is that not operating on the ground then?
No, you're absolutely right. So, yes, the occupying power has the legal responsibility to provide aid. Now, we've gone so far beyond that. That has not happened ever since the horrors of October 7. So it's up to the United Nations and generous donors to fund that aid and then the United Nations to deliver it. What we have been pleading for at the highest levels of the UN and now seeing governments join that is to at least facilitate that. For Israel to at least facilitate that, allow the safe movement, allow multiple routes for us to do that, allow us to go across the Gaza Strip. That hasn't happened. And even in the best of times, we were struggling to do that because, again, it wasn't being facilitated. So you're right with that readout. At the most basic levels, facilitate that aid. But at the moment, you know, if we're coming off an 11-week blockade, no food, no water, no medicines, then we're a long, long, long way from that. But yes, your reading of international law is absolutely correct. But, you know, we've seen the destruction of security forces, destruction of a society. And now, as I say, Colin, there's one route that we're allowed to get aid into. You know, it's almost like creating the circumstances for this to fail. Nonetheless, very brave colleagues, very brave partners who are desperate because they see the desperation. I mean, I have colleagues on the ground who have lost significant amounts of weight. Everyone knows not what needs to be done. But as you rightly point out, for MSF's very candid line, it's not nearly enough.
And the people who are on the ground, who are in need of aid, your colleagues, as you say, are desperate. If the humanitarian workers are in desperate need themselves, the people to whom they're distributing the aid are desperate as well. So there are presumably real logistical and security concerns of getting these trucks around and getting them to the places they're needed.
Oh, without a doubt. No, the desperation is, I mean, I'm in touch. You know, I've made friends there. I met volunteers, doctors, you know, mums, and I have mums regularly talking to me that they haven't eaten for days. They give their food to a child. I had a parent explaining to me that they bought a portion of a vegetable. UNICEF is in this incredible position whereby we do food, water, nutrition. We keep giving out cash. So even during the blockade, we're doing that. But then you see prices spiking. So it's very, very difficult. But yes, in terms of, as you say, the security on the ground, that's why we have pleaded for more than one route. You know, the United Nations has been very upfront when looting has occurred. And there is a very real risk of looting now because we're given one road to go in and there has been a complete blockade of everything that a human needs to survive for 11 weeks. But during the ceasefire, when we had 500 trucks a day, there was no looting. It had finished. So, you know, again, we've got to be careful that what's being, you know, that's a limited amount of aid after a horrendous blockade and given one route, we've got to make sure that this is not literally designed to discredit tried and tested aid systems. We'll do everything we possibly can. But as you've said there, in terms of international law, Colin, it has to be facilitated at its most basic level. And we haven't seen that time and again for 20 months.
And UNICEF is the UN agency for children. So what are you hearing? We heard the warning put out that children were in desperate need if they didn't receive aid within, you know, what's now the next 24 hours, there was serious risk of starvation. What kind of updates are your colleagues getting from around Gaza on the situation with children there?
Horrendous for a couple of reasons. As you say, firstly, the coping capacity is smashed. So you've got that, you know, starvation. There are certainly, children have certainly starved in the photos I've seen, and I've been on the ground in Gaza and I've seen that, and there's nothing grimmer. It's the screams of a child as the pain as their body starts to sort of feed upon itself, its fat, then its muscles. Then that child, Colin, grows quiet because they are losing that battle. At the same time, of course, you've got hospitals that have come under attack. Two hospitals, you know, were shut, one in the north and one in the south, that are providing the most essential care. And it's not just to children, it's to pregnant women. You know, women are unable to breastfeed right now based on the stress and mostly based on the lack of nutrition. So all these things that sound so horrendous to your audiences, and they are, but they are what UNICEF deals with in conflict zones. But normally they're places where you're 1,000 miles from a semblance of care. It's very difficult. We're using planes and helicopters and airdrops. This is not that. This is entirely man-made. Everything we need, incubators for newborns, you know, formula for mamas who can't breastfeed anymore, nutrition for those babies that brings them back to life in a week or two. It is, and it has been, on the border for far, far too long.
And people who are on the move, if they are being displaced by a military offensive and being pushed from one place to another, how logistically difficult is it to get vital supplies to people who are in transit?
Well, colleagues have got very, very good at that because people have been moved four or five times. I think what's harder is that every time someone moves, they lose two things. One is they lose a little bit more of their psychological coping capacity because, again, they're moving at 2 o'clock in the morning. They've left, you know, I've had so many people say to me, they are not leaving again. They went home in the ceasefire. Home was rubble and they put a tent over that rubble. But to be forced to move again, they are in uncharted territory when it comes to the psychological trauma of picking up children, usually in the death of night, don't forget, to have to do this. And every time they move, they leave something else. Maybe it's a pot, maybe it's a pan, maybe as a mum said, all I did last time was grab my children. So we will go to where people are, but remembering there were months and months and months where we couldn't access people in the north. So it goes back to, as we spoke of earlier, where we are allowed to go by officials. But yeah, people have been moved five or six times, and it's one of the reasons at the highest levels of the United Nations they've been very quick to say a clear no to this new aid modality, if you will, that is being talked about, a private sector thing that will just operate in the south, that will forcibly move people again. And Colin, people know when they move that, you know, the idea that nowhere in safe is Gaza, in Gaza, is not hyperbolic. It's not a line. It's very, very clear. People do not want to move 3, 4, 5 miles because they know during those times they are at high risk of bombing or being shot by a quadcopter. So people are exhausted, they're terrified, and they don't want to have to move again, particularly because they have moved to so-called unilaterally declared safe zones. And they've seen those safe zones bombed. They've seen people burnt to death in tents in those so-called safe zones.
James, thank you very much. James Elder there, UNICEF spokesperson.